Good afternoon. My name is Lonnie Roach. I'm from Austin, Texas, and I represent Robert George, the appellant, today. This case, I believe, asks the court to answer two, I believe, fairly straightforward questions, and simple questions, as a matter of fact. It's a simple contract interpretation case. But at the risk of sounding a bit presumptuous, I believe both questions need to be answered, and I believe they need to be answered in order. The reason is the district court did not do that. The district court did not answer one of these questions, and I believe that caused the district court to reach an incorrect conclusion and ruling in the case. The two questions are, the first question is whether in this ERISA disability benefits case, there is sufficient evidence in the record supporting Reliance Standard determination that my client, Robert George, was not totally disabled because of his ability to work at three particular jobs: protective signal operator, a records clerk, and a crew scheduler. The second question is whether a mental or nervous condition caused Mr. George to be disqualified him from disability benefits under the policy. And the reason, I didn't state that very well, the second question is whether a mental or nervous condition caused Mr. George not to be able to perform his regular occupation or to perform an occupation that pays substantially the same amount as his regular occupation, because that is the definition of total disability under this particular insurance policy.
Wouldn't that, the payment restriction or the payment qualification, wouldn't that apply to the first question too? Whether he could do those one of those three jobs that would pay the same amount of money?
It would not, because this insurance...
So the similar salary only comes into play with the mental illness?
The salary component is actually part of both questions.
That's what I ask you. It's part of the definition of total disability.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question then.
Okay.
Yes, because the way this policy defined total disability is the inability to do your regular occupation. My client was a helicopter pilot. I hadn't been a helicopter pilot for 34 years. If you can't do that job, though, and or after a certain amount of time that you've paid benefits for the inability to do that job, the question is whether or not you could perform some other job which pays substantially the same amount as your regular job. There is no dispute in this case that Mr. George cannot be a helicopter pilot. There's no argument that he could return to being a helicopter pilot. He's been evaluated by a number of doctors on a number of contexts, and everyone agrees that Mr. George can never be a helicopter pilot again. So the question with regard to the first denial that we're dealing with today is whether or not there is evidence in the record that supports that he could perform another occupation that pays substantially the same amount as he earned when he was a helicopter pilot. And since this is an ERISA case, we're limited to the administrative record, and we're limited to the determination made by Reliance Standard when it denied the claim. Reliance Standard denied Mr. George's claim on the grounds that he could work at one of three different occupations. These were all support occupations, which you might find at an airport, for example, a crew scheduler, a records clerk. These were the type of support occupations which would not involve actually flying a helicopter. Mr. George had a very simple appeal to the denial based on his ability to perform one of these three occupations. He appealed and said, look, even if I could do any of the three occupations that you say I can do, they don't pay substantially the same amount as I earned as a helicopter pilot. I made $75,000 a year as a helicopter pilot. You say I can be a records clerk. A record clerk makes $28,000 a year. You say I can be a crew scheduler. A crew scheduler makes, I believe it's $36,000 a year. You say it can be a protective signal operator, which I think is the guy who does the flags. and he makes $40,000 a year. This is not substantially the same amount as I could earn as a helicopter pilot. In response to this appeal that Mr. George filed, Reliance Standard did not say, oh, you're wrong. A records clerk can make $75,000 a year, or a crew scheduler could make $75,000 a year. Reliance Standard was completely silent on the issue of the earnings capacity of these three selected occupations that it identified. What Reliance Standard did was it challenged the evidence that Mr. George submitted in his appeal. I said, well, we've seen the evidence that you've submitted in your appeal, and we're not convinced. You got your evidence from an internet site, and there's no indication that you hired an expert or conducted a labor market analysis, and so therefore we're not going to credit your evidence as to what these occupations made. But that's not the point. It's true that Mr. George, in his appeal, supplied evidence of what these three occupations make, and the fact that those occupations earn substantially less than he earned in his regular occupation as a helicopter pilot. The point is that it was Reliance Standard's obligation to support its denial with adequate evidence. And if Reliance Standard denied Mr. George's claim on the grounds that you can do some other job that makes and earn the same amount as you could make as a helicopter pilot, then it was incumbent upon Reliance Standard to point to the evidence in the record where that could be found. What they should have said is, this is how much these jobs make. They should have put some evidence in the record, and they could have done so very easily. Reliance Standard relied on a vocational consultant to determine that Mr. George was capable of doing these three jobs, and it was their own employee. This was not some outside review. They didn't have to really go out and hire anyone to do this vocational consultation. It was an employee at their office. All they had to do is simply ask her, what is the earnings capacity of these alternative occupations you say Mr. George can perform? It is a necessary
You could have done that too, I guess. You could have cross-examined the witness and said, are these three careers or whatever, job placement opportunities, would they pay comparable to what he was making as a helicopter pilot?
Then
the evidence would, okay.
We did, to the extent that you can do so in an ERISA case. Remember, this is a case that's tried on an administrative record. Mm-hmm. We don't do discovery in ERISA cases, so I could not call this vocational consultant and take her deposition, and because we would be introducing new evidence in the record after the administrative record had already closed.
But you already had your website information in there, right?
Yes. We submitted that information in the administrative appeal to the denial that Mr. George was no longer disabled because he could perform one of those three occupations. We went and we found from a website, on a job search website, we found the actual descriptions of the three occupations they suggested Mr. George could perform. There's a citation to the evidence in the record in my brief. I don't have it in front of me.
What about at the trial?
I'm sorry?
At the trial, did the PR person or whoever the employee testified? No, okay.
No, Your Honor.
So you didn't have an opportunity to ask those questions?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
We generally do not take testimony in the ERISA trials because it's a closed record. Really, the trial, I would have to say the trial consisted of pretty much what we're doing here today. The case was briefed, and we presented oral arguments. And that's really the extent of a trial we can have in the district court without running the risk of introducing evidence which was not in the administrative record, and so thus not in front of the administrator.
Nor would it be in front of Judge Yackel.
The evidence, well, it would not be in front of Judge Yackel. It would not be independent evidence in front of Judge Yackel. The evidence, of course, is the evidence which was already in the record, and it was that evidence that we submitted when we filed our administrative appeal.
What about the limitations provision?
The limitation provision incorporates specific defined terms, several of them, as a matter of fact. And this is the mistake that Judge Yackel, in my opinion, made. Judge Yackel never answered the first question, is whether Mr. George was totally disabled based on his ability to do one of these three jobs. He went to the second question. The problem with that is that the second question, the mental nervous limitation, incorporates the policy definition of total disability. So in other words, in order for the mental nervous limitation to apply, a mental or nervous condition must cause or contribute to an insured's inability to perform his regular occupation.
So what you're saying is, you're saying that Judge Yackel was not able to say, assuming that your client, Mr. George, was totally disabled, assuming that his disability was contributed to by a mental disorder, and therefore the benefits stop at 24 months. He could not assume with, let's say, I'll grant you that he was totally disabled. Let's consider it a given. It was contributed to, on his own doctor's analysis, by a nervous disorder. Therefore, no benefits after 24 months.
In order to say that, what Judge Yackel would have had to say is that his total disability was contributed to by a mental disorder because a mental disorder either A, prevented him from performing his regular occupation of being a helicopter pilot. And we know...
Well, that's not the disability, the definition that's relevant for after 24 months is not being a helicopter pilot.
Exactly. After 24 months, it's perform any occupation.
Any occupation.
I'm sorry?
Any occupation that pays in the same ballpark.
Substantially the same as the regular occupation.
Right. So assuming that he's produced evidence of that, assuming that the that actually, who has the burden of showing total disability?
Who has the burden of showing disability?
Yeah.
Well, the plaintiff has, the claimant would have the burden of
showing
disability.
Okay, so let's just assume that he's met that burden. You can't do that here?
No, Your Honor, you can't. Because, first of all, this is, when we're talking about the policy limitation, we're no longer talking about the plaintiff, the claimant meeting his burden to show he's disabled. Under the terms of the policy, we're assuming that, and now we're looking at this limiting clause, at which point its reliance standard needs to support its application of the limiting clause. Limitations and insurance policies are treated the same as exclusions
right.
in insurance policies.
It's an exclusion. That's exactly right.
So what reliance standard would say, would argue, is that, okay, we will give you that he can't be a helicopter pilot, but if it were not for his PTSD and his depressive moods, he could do something else and earn as much as he could as a helicopter pilot. And so therefore, a mental nervous condition contributes to his total disability. Because he could be earning $75,000 a year doing something, or thereabouts, doing something, were it not for this mental nervous condition. And the reason why Judge Yackel couldn't say that, at least couldn't say that accurately, is because there's no evidence in the record of what that job could be. What could this man possibly do? He had an 11th grade education. He spent 34 years as a helicopter pilot, did nothing else in his life. What could he do that he could earn as much as he could when he was a helicopter pilot? And the answer is there's nothing. At least there's no evidence in this record. There's no evidence that Reliance Standard could point to and say, you could do this job and you could earn substantially the same amount as you earned when you were a helicopter pilot, but for a mental nervous condition. And that is how, that is, I submit, why Judge Yackel made the mistake in the trial court below. Because in order, under the mental nervous limitation, in order for it to apply, a mental nervous condition must be causing the person to be disabled under the terms of the policy. And the terms of this policy are that you either can't do your regular job or you can't do another job that pays as much as your regular job. And since there's no such job, I don't believe any such job exists, but there's certainly no evidence of any such job in the record, then Reliance Standard could not point to that mental nervous limitation and say, hey, we wouldn't have to pay you if it were not for your mental nervous condition. Because if it were not for your PTSD, you could earn a sufficient amount and we would be off the hook. Since they can't say that, they can't support the decision to deny.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Bachrach?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Good afternoon, Joshua Bachrach. I represent the appellee Reliance Standard Life. And there were two bases for the denial here, and the question here is whether there was an abuse of discretion. The district court said no, and we believe that that was 100% correct. Now, counsel, I was trying to figure out his arguments in the briefing, and I'm still trying to figure out how he's trying to say that we have to prove that he's totally disabled from any occupation before you even look at the mental or nervous disorder limitation. That's just not the way it is, and that's what the judge said here.
No, he said he said the plaintiff would have the burden to show total disability.
Right, and that's true. The plaintiff does have the burden to show total disability, but what the district court did was, the court said, the evidence proves that he cannot do any occupation because of his mental or nervous disorder, and the benefits have been paid for 24 months because of that. Therefore, he's not entitled to any additional benefits. So if he is not able to do any occupation because of his mental or nervous disorder, and that is fully supported, then you don't need to then look at step two, which, what are those other occupations? Because he's received the maximum amount of benefits. And that's what the district court did.
That's step one in the total disability definition. In order to have an exclusion, you first have to have the disability.
Well, the first question is if there's coverage, but if the fact is that there can be no coverage because the limitation applies. So even if you say that he is...
I think you're doing it backwards, but that's just me.
That's how the district court analyzed it. So I guess the way to do it, and I don't...
Maybe that was backwards, too.
It may have been. But let's say the district court assumed, and I'm not going to for reasons I'll explain. Let's say the district court said, I'm going to assume you were totally disabled from any occupation, but it doesn't matter because you've already received 24 months of benefits and a mental illness contributed to that, then there's still the same response. You're not entitled to any benefits. So it's kind of like some of these analysis that courts do where, all right, here's the entire analysis, but if we reach this one, we don't need to go through the entire step. In fact, that's the case when you're looking at interpretations. The Fifth Circuit has said when you're looking at interpretations under ERISA, here's this big test. But the real fact is, if it's reasonable, you don't need to go through these different steps. So that's kind of what the judge, I think, did here. I'm obviously not privy to the thought process, but based on the reading, that's what I get. Now, counsel's position really has been that there is no mental illness that caused or contributed to this disability. It was just mild, his words. It was just mild and didn't prevent him from working. So that's the real question here, is that an accurate statement? And the answer to that is absolutely not, because you look at the claimant's own psychiatrist's reports, Dr. Gail Eisenhower, and what Dr. Eisenhower, who's a psychiatrist, said was that he has marked and extreme being the most that she could have classified as symptoms. She diagnosed him with post-traumatic stress disorder, major depression. She said, and this is the key, she said that she had, quote, significant concerns, end quote, with his ability to work because of his mental illness symptoms.
Well, counsel, you said, the Fifth Circuit said, if it's reasonable, you don't have to go through these steps. Okay, what's your case for that?
That if an interpretation is reasonable, I believe it's Wilcox in the Fifth Circuit. So we then have the own treating doctor, which I think is enough. The own treating doctor saying he can't do anything because of his mental illness. That should be enough. But then we also have an IME, an independent medical exam by Dr. Buck. And Dr. Buck said that he has, Mr. George has anxiety and has depression, just like the treating doctor. And says, but for this mental illness component, he is capable of light-duty work. That seals it right there. What this doctor, agreeing with the treating doctor, says is there is nothing he can do because of the mental illness. And those benefits are limited to 24 months, and they have been paid in full. So this is concrete evidence that this person's not entitled to additional benefits. Now, as an alternative basis, what Reliance Standard said was, you're also not totally disabled from any occupation. And it doesn't need, this court doesn't need to reach that conclusion, just like the district court necessarily didn't, because of the fact that there is no occupation that he could perform based on his mental illness. But what's happening here is that clearly is the claimant's burden, but he's trying to shift it to my client, and that's wrong. What he's saying is that there's no evidence in the record that his client, we can't point to any evidence in the record that his client is totally disabled from any occupation. But it's his burden to show that there, that his client is totally disabled from any occupation. If there's no evidence...
But that's what he said. He said it's his burden to show total disability, but you're leaving off the part about that it has to be comparable pay.
Right.
He put that, and what he's saying is that your client didn't rebut or refute the fact that he couldn't do these three jobs that he could maybe do really didn't qualify because they don't have adequate salaries.
But
and so he's saying then it's your burden at that point to rebut it.
It's not. It's always his burden to prove a total disability. So he had to prove, I am totally disabled from any occupation. How can he do that? He could do it with medical evidence, but he can't because he concedes in his brief, incapable of doing light duty work. He says in his brief, yeah, I guess I can do those.
It's not comparable. It doesn't.
I understand.
It doesn't match your definition of total disability.
I understand. I'm going to get to the substantial earnings part of it, but that's the second part. So he'd have to show two things. One is that there is no medically, there's no job that he can do. And then he has to show that there is no job which pays substantially the same. It's his burden. It's the definition of total disability. And what has he shown on his own to show that there's no job out there that pays substantially similar salary? Nothing. He produced nothing. All he does is he flips the burden and says, aha, you haven't shown it. Now, what my client did was they did identify three positions. And he says those aren't good enough, that those don't qualify based on these internet printouts, these single-page documents. Now, let's look at those documents. First of all, the way disability is defined is by the national economy. It's not his specific job. It's not jobs just in Texas. It's the national economy. But if you look at those pages, what do they say? They're limited to jobs in Texas. So that's not the salary under the national economy. They're also entry-level jobs.
It might be better than the national economy.
It could be, or it's hard to say, but that's a guess, right? But here's the best part. You're right, Your Honor, because guess what? On the bottom of each one of those three pages, for each one of those alternative occupations, they state that salaries can vary greatly. That's in the documents he relies on. Greatly based on the company, the location, and the experience of the person. And so what you need is a vocational expert. It's hard to read, by the way, Your Honor. Judge Clement, I read these things, and I need magnifying glasses because it's very difficult. But if you look...
You're so much older than I am.
Trust me, I am. But when you look at it, you need a vocational expert. He's not a vocational expert. He needed one to say, I have looked at the companies, the locations, and the experience of Mr. George. I've done that analysis, and I find either, yes, they are comparable, or no, they're not substantially similar. And he didn't do that. So he's asking you to rely, and ask rely standards to rely on these. What it is, it's, you know, there's a commercial out there where a man, you know, this woman says that she can rely on everything because it's on the internet. And the man comes up and pretends to be a French model when he clearly isn't. And that's similar. You know, you can't just pull something off the internet and say, this has to be true, it's on the internet. In fact, that document, again, each one of those three pages specifically say, for more complete information, look to this website. But he didn't include that either.
So what you're saying is it was his burden to prove total disability. And the judge said, look, let's just assume you've done that, in effect. Judge says, let's assume you've done that. The problem is here, your own expert says that your disability is a function of your mental illness in part, and therefore it's paid in full at this point.
That's the big point, yes, Your Honor. But that even beyond that, if you look to the subpart, which is if there was no mental or nervous disorder, did he sustain his burden of proving that he's totally disabled from any occupation that pays a substantially comparable salary? And by the way, substantially comparable doesn't mean the exact amount. And that's what he's saying. He's saying it's got to pay $75,000. That's not what substantially comparable means. And you'll see that some of these pay $50,000, I believe, was one of them. And, you know, let's just say that there's information to suggest that some of them paid a lot more based on experience. So that information was never provided. So he can't just say, look at this. This refutes all that you've said, vocational expert, because he's not a vocational expert. And he goes even further, and you just heard the argument earlier by counsel where he says, these are support jobs. So of course they can't pay nearly as much as being a pilot. But that's conjecture too. He's not, again, a vocational expert. You needed a vocational expert to come in here and to give proof. Think of it this way, if this were a trial, and he tried to introduce that page without a vocational expert, that wouldn't have happened. Now, I'm not saying the rules of evidence apply in this ERISA case, but did Reliance Standard have good reason to question the accuracy of that information? And not only that, but the applicability here, because it didn't address Mr. George's experience, and it was based only on this local economy, and it was based on other... That was never addressed. He failed to do that. So when counsel says that it was a simple appeal, that was his words. He just told you. This was a simple appeal. All he did was say, those three occupations don't apply because I have this internet search. That internet search was inadequate to begin with. But again, it was his burden to say, not just your investigation's wrong, but, and here's why. It's my burden. Here's why I'm totally disabled from any occupation that pays a substantially similar salary. Here's a letter from my doctor. Here are reports. Here's vocational information from an expert. And he didn't do it. So you're right. He's right. He provided a simple appeal. But that simple appeal was wholly inadequate for him to sustain his burden of proof. And this is an ERISA case. So we only have to say that we have a reasonable basis. The Fifth Circuit has said in the Corey case that a decision will be upheld as long as it falls somewhere on the continuum of reasonableness, even on the lower end of it. And we think it's on the higher end, but at the very least, this is a reasonable decision by Reliance Standard based on the treating doctor's own statements about his mental illness, based on the failure of the claimant to submit any evidence that is reliable, that he cannot perform the duties of his own occupation.
Isn't there sort of an inherent conflict of interest with Reliance making these decisions where they're the ones that have to pay, and if they decide, oh dear, the exclusion applies, I don't have to pay?
Well, the Supreme Court in Metropolitan Life versus Glenn said that there is this structural conflict or inherent conflict of interest. And if there's evidence of it, well, here's what they exactly said. They said that if all of the other factors in a case are closely aligned, that a conflict of interest may shift it one way or the other. But here, A, the factors aren't closely aligned. We don't believe the evidence is substantially in favor of Reliance Standard. But B, there was no evidence that the conflict of interest in any way impacted the denial of benefits. There's no history of bias that was shown. There was no evidence to show, and by the way, the Fifth Circuit has said, you can introduce evidence of bias to show that the conflict of interest actually mattered in a particular case. And in this case, that wasn't done. Why? Because my client ordered an independent medical examination. And courts have said that when you go out there, and you don't have to. The court in Swetman versus Commercial Union, the Fifth Circuit said, you don't need to have that IME. But when you do that, you're showing that you've had a thorough and unbiased decision-making process. So here, my answer would be, Judge Clement, based on this record and based on what the district court considered, there's no evidence that the conflict of interest in any way influenced the decision, and therefore it's not a relevant factor. So again, I think the district court perhaps didn't explain the reasoning as well as you would have liked, but what did the court say? The district court did say that his disability is contributed to by a mental or nervous disorder. Any disability that he would have is contributed to by a mental or nervous disorder, an extreme one, according to his own doctors. Therefore, benefits were limited to 24 months. Those have been paid. The claim is over. We don't think that the evidence, again, comes anywhere close to showing that the denial was an abuse of discretion. We don't think the claimant sustained his burden and only tries to flip the burden here onto us, which is wrong. So therefore, we're asking that the court affirm the judgment of the district court. If the panel has any other questions, though, I'd be glad to answer them. Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Roach.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Bachrach did not say and does not suggest is that these jobs that were suggested by Reliance Standard pay substantially the same as a helicopter pilot. He nibbles around the edges. He wants the court to infer that, but he won't come out and say it. He won't come out and say it because he knows it's not likely true. Because, with all due respect, he's completely wrong on how we structure an ERISA case with regard to the burden of proof. It's Section 503 of ERISA, 29 U.S.C. Section 1133, requires the administrator to identify the specific reasons for the denial of the claim. It does not require a claimant to disprove every possibility that could arise over the course of a litigation. Yes, the claimant must establish that he's disabled under the terms of the policy, but he did that. Mr. George did that. Reliance Standard found that Mr. George was disabled under the terms of the policy. What Reliance Standard did is it said, we now find that you're no longer disabled because you can perform these three occupations. Those were the specific reasons it gave. Those were the specific reasons that we addressed with regard to the appeal. Another thing that my opponent does not state is that a mental nervous condition is what caused Mr. George to stop flying as a helicopter pilot. He flew for 20 years with these conditions. He had post-traumatic stress disorder since he crashed his helicopter in 1985. Didn't prevent him from working for 20 years with these conditions. And that was not the basis that Reliance Standard denied his...
The evidence shows is that the emotional disability, the emotional problems he had greatly increased with age from 10% to 30%.
The evidence showed that the VA restructured its apportionment of what it considered disables him. If you've ever seen one of these readouts from the VA, they say, here's 15 conditions, 5% of this applies to you, 30% of this applies to you, 10% of this condition, and they all add up to 100%. And the VA reapportioned his distribution of disability attributed to post-traumatic stress disorder from 10% to 30%. But that, at the same time, the VA examiner who conducted a comprehensive examination, which included a psychological assessment, found no contribution for a psychological or psychiatric condition to his inability to be gainfully employed as a helicopter pilot. Flat out said it, no contribution. And so,
even with the 30% designation?
Even with the 30% definition. The specific findings of what the VA examiner found caused him to be unable to be gainfully employed as a helicopter pilot are listed in the brief. There's about 15 of them. It starts with his amputated leg and goes down from there. But not a mental nervous condition. And, Judge Clement, you mentioned that it sounds like Reliance Standard analyzing this backwards. You're absolutely...
Well, you had that in your brief, I think, so
yes.
I thought I would ask you.
Okay. Well, thank you. I thought it was a good point because I think it underscores how Judge Akel got off track here. Because it's not enough to say that, well, you have post-traumatic stress, so therefore it must have contributed to your total disability. That's not how Reliance Standard analyzes this. If you want to know how do we analyze the contribution of any potential mental nervous condition to total disability, all we have to do is take a look at how Reliance Standard did it. They're the administrator. They're the ones that makes this determination. You can find that in its medical review conducted by Dr. Jacqueline Hess. That is the doctor Reliance Standard hired to conduct the medical review after Robert George's appeal. And what Reliance Standard asked Dr. Hess is, they asked her two questions. The first question is, are his VA conditions, this stable him, similar to the things that caused him, do they cause him impairment? They had to ask that question because there was a separate issue that's not at issue in this appeal on an offset they were trying to take. The second question they asked is if, in the absence of any mental nervous condition, would this man still be impaired? And she said yes. Even without the contribution of any mental nervous condition, he is totally disabled. That is the issue that Reliance Standard used to determine whether or not a mental nervous condition contributed to his total disability.
Thank you, Mr. Roach.
Thank you.
We'll take a brief recess. We'll be back.